Good morning, everyone. My name is Patrick, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And first things first, I just want to thank the committee and everybody that organized this event for the invitation to speak. I'm fortunate that I get to live a life of invitation as a result of my willingness to be abstinent and spiritually fit in Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm not a guy that volunteered to be here. As a matter of fact, I don't think anybody volunteered to be on this screen today. Why would you volunteer for such a pernicious, vicious, cruel illness? What I am is walking, talking, living, breathing evidence of the power of God and the 12 steps. That's the evidence speaks for itself. 10 years ago, I was 420 pounds, dying of type 2 diabetes after having put on 160 pounds after a triple bypass. I walked into a room of Overeaters Anonymous with 10 years in another fellowship under my belt, another 12-step fellowship, dying of an addiction, reporting to you that I was living a spiritual life. And there was nothing spiritual about the way I was treating my body, my mind, or my soul. For me, recovery goes much further than just abstinence from overeating. Obviously, it's the first thing. And I've had black and white abstinence in my life, back-to-back black and white abstinence in my life since August 23rd, or excuse me, August 26th of 2020. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 10 years. So do the math. There's been a couple of bumps in the road. But what I can report to you is that I've been relieved of 220 pounds. I've fully resolved type 2 diabetes. I fully resolved sleep apnea. I have retained the use of my legs, which at one point was in question. I have suffered amputations on my feet. I'm missing four of my toes. I've had multiple surgeries as a result of the health issues that were caused by my obesity and my compulsive overeating. And the reason I start my talk with that is that this is a serious illness. I'm not here to rub you on the back and tell you that it's going to be okay, because it's not. The problem I have is when you take the food away, the internal dialogue begins. The spiritual malady kicks in because I don't have that which I need to quiet that. So I will make a decision to do the thing that I desperately want to stop doing, compulsively overeating. I will make a decision to continue to do the thing and trigger the physical allergy. I have a physical allergy to sugar. I have a physical allergy to flour. I have a physical allergy to other ingredients in food. Yet I will continue to consume them in spite of the fact that I don't want to die. And I'm killing myself. And I'm intellectually aware and I can't stop. And if not for a responsible, recovered member of this fellowship who 12-stepped me rather aggressively, at the International AA convention in 2015, who 12-stepped me into Overeaters Anonymous. You have a different speaker here today. I'm going to read something out of the big book. Chapter 3, the beginning, page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. If you're on this call today and you're suffering, you've been in and out, or you're brand new, and you don't understand why we have this, welcome. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real compulsive overeaters. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people, to eat like other people. I desperately wanted to be able to eat like other people and not have the consequences of morbid obesity. In my case, that's how it manifested. It manifests itself in many different ways in our fellowship. If you're a binger and a purger, or you're an anorexic, welcome. We have a solution. And oddly enough, food isn't the problem. Food is a problem, but it's not the problem. Listen to my words carefully. Food is a problem. It has to be eliminated. We have to achieve abstinence. But what we have is a spiritual malady. And that's what the 12 steps treat, is the malady, that which brings me back to that which is killing me in spite of my objections, my powerlessness and unmanageability. And the most unmanageable thought I have is that I can manage my powerlessness. The most unmanageable situation that arises in my life is the idea that I can somehow, someday, control and enjoy my eating. Well, geez, Patrick, you know, oh, whoa. Well, this thing's killing people. And we have a solution. It's maiming people as we speak. I was in the hospital with my sister yesterday, who was having a hip replaced, and I saw many examples of what appear to me to be people who share our symptoms. I'm not going to diagnose them, but you know, they appear to share our symptoms, who are having serious health troubles, as I was. The idea that somehow, someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. How many times have you woken up after a binge and thought to yourself, I'll never do that again? And then by noon or by 2 or by 4 o'clock, the cycle begins again. You know, I had an Al-Anon in my life a long time ago that paraphrased step two as to say it didn't restore me to sanity, it introduced me to it. Which I thought was a really good way to approach it, because I didn't know anything about sanity when I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I had been claiming spiritual fitness while performing an insane act of walking my body to a near-death situation. And if that's not your experience, I get it. I understand, but it is my experience. And my job here is to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And the strength and the hope is this: all of those things have been resolved, all of that tragedy. I am fully present to my family who needs me in this moment, right? I am fully present to my sister. I transport her to the hospital. I'll go pick her up later. I got my niece who drove up from Omaha, who's in my life because I have restored those relationships with people that were so severely broken by my isolationism and my selfishness and dishonesty. All of that has been resolved, and I get to live this life of invitation. I get invited to do things like this. People hear me talk, and one of two things happen. I either get invited to do another talk, or they run out of the room. And that's okay. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion, like we are other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. My first memory of compulsive overeating was being chided for being on the kitchen floor of my childhood home, covered in chocolate after having built a tower of a chair with a box and a pot on top. And then I got up on the shelves in the cupboards and climbed up there to get the 2 pound bag of chocolate chips that I knew my mother had stashed up there to make chocolate chip cookies. And no matter where she stashed them, I would find them. This happened more than once. And I will report to you that in that time, my parents thought what they had on their hands was a mischievous top child. And what I know now, because a responsible, recovered member of this fellowship took me through my first step, was that I was already addicted to chocolate and sugar at 4 and 5 years old. I don't recall a time in my life where I wasn't overweight. I wasn't always morbidly obese, but I was always overweight. 6, 7, 8, 10 years old, my mother's taking me to buy clothes. We have to buy the husky pants, right? Anybody on the, the way they used to describe pants for the bigger kids. Yeah, Jeff, your way. I figured Jeff might have learned about the husky pants. He looks like he might be in my demographic age-wise. And I got picked on for being pudgy or the fat kid, right? And I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that I found comfort in food, right? That what happened for me when I ingested certain foods, bread, chocolate, certain things, when I ingested those, I got some internal calming and peace. And I didn't know that that didn't happen to everybody, right? I just knew that it happened for me. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I was witness to and victim of things that no child should be witness to or victim of. And you can let your head run to the dark places with that. But that's not why I'm a compulsive overeater or alcoholic for that matter, because I am an alcoholic in recovery. My home didn't cause this. What causes this is what the doctor describes in his opinion. I have a mental obsession and a physical allergy. I have a physiological illness that my brain continually tells me I can override when I consume certain things. And that physical allergy is triggered, and my intellectual capability goes out the window, and I always binge. I repeat, 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 thousands of times in a row. And then people will say to me, "Well, Patrick, you're just making bad choices about your food." And my response is, "Bleep you, I'm not that stupid, because I'm not." A man asked me a question a long time ago that might have saved my life, and it was this: "Is it possible you're in more trouble than you think you are? And is it possible that what's stopping you from recovering from this illness is an opinion about an experience you refuse to have?" Whoa. He was right. It landed. And one of the things I know about this illness is that there's probably somebody on this meeting today. We've got 77 people, and I'm sure more coming as the day goes on. There's somebody here that hasn't overeaten in a long, long time who is suffering from the spiritual malady, because we don't do face-to-face meetings anymore, because they haven't had a new experience with the steps, because they haven't treated that internal condition, and they're suffering from resentment and fear. They're worried about things outside their purview. Their spiritual practice is lacking. And when confronted with that, I have one speed. I'm offended. I have a 4-year-old that lives in my head. He doesn't have a name, but he's got a one-word vocabulary when somebody suggests something that might be beneficial to me, and that word is meow. And if you're giggling or laughing or nodding your head, you can identify. The 12-step path to freedom from compulsive overeating is proven and repeatable. You cannot deny that it works. If you are struggling, and this is where I get into a little trouble sometimes, but if you are struggling, it is not a program problem, it's a you problem. And you can tap into the collective conscience of Overeaters Anonymous for the willingness to do this one more day at a time. That's why we're here. We're here for you. I've got my abstinence. I have a good life. I am present to people all over the world on a regular basis. I have a wonderful job. I have a family that I am connected to and involved in. I have a wide, wide life. And 10 years ago, it was about this wide. I have dignity, I have respect, I have kindness, compassion, and love to give to people, and I receive that in return. And it doesn't mean, listen, you ask my family how I'm doing, you'll probably get a different report than I give you. I can go full donkey on some days. That's why 10 and 11 are so important in my life. I have a rigorous practice of 10 and 11 on a daily basis. And people say to me, when I say things like rigorous discipline, it's in the book. And the reason they put it in the book is they knew the depths of darkness and despair that this disease can drag people into, and how many other people around them can be harmed. So back to my story. At 13, I discovered beverage alcohol, and I'm instantly alcoholic. I'm an off-the-cliff drunk. It gets me there quicker than the cookies do. So now what happens? Well, I binge drink, and to get over my hangover, I binge eat. So now I've got two compulsive illnesses. I have the physical allergy to sugar. I have the physical allergy to beverage alcohol. And they're switching who's jumping in the driver's seat. And the car's going down the road on two wheels in the ditch at 150 miles an hour. And if you ask me how I'm doing, I'll tell you I'm fine. I'm 14 years old. I'm probably 50 pounds overweight. I'm on the street because what's going on at home is dangerous. And I'm drinking, I'm eating, I'm consuming other, as my AA sponsor likes to call it, non-conference approved dry goods. And if you're giggling, you know what I'm talking about. And if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm telling you I'm fine because I have what I need to operate in the world. It's getting me through. It's working. I'm able to get a job when I'm 15, 16 years old. I start providing for myself. I'm out of the home as soon as I can. Right? And I've got this duality going on. I watch my father die of alcoholism when I'm 23 years old. My response is to go compulsively eat and then drink. And my idea always was, well, I'll put a good base of food in before I get drunk. And meanwhile, in my in you know, I'm in my 20s. I'm able to work. My body's operating at you know, full speed. Well, fast forward to 44 years old. I'm dying of alcoholism. I'm having heart attacks during DTs and walking out of intensive care wards and in the liquor stores. And I'm still compulsively eating. And people will say to me, you're making bad choices. And my response will be pretty colorful because I'm not that dumb and I can't stop. I don't want to die and I can't stop doing what's killing me because I don't understand what I'm up against. And a responsible recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous came to a detox and introduced me to AA. And I went on a journey to recovery in AA. And for about the first 5 years, things were good. And then some things happened in my life. I had that triple bypass. I had a triple bypass at 5 years sober. And I remember waking up in the recovery room of the hospital and thinking, well, I'm not going to smoke anymore. I'm not going to drink anymore. But I can eat whatever I want now because I've got kind of a new lease on life. And in the ensuing 6 years, I put on about 180 pounds. From year five of my sobriety in AA, which, and I was pretty spiritually fit, I was doing everything I was supposed to do. From year five to year 11 in that fellowship, I put on 180 pounds. And if you ask me, because this thing under my nose runs really well, I memorized the front end of the big book, I can get to a podium, I can sound really good, I can appear to do all the things that are supposedly spiritually fit, and I have no practice. I can tell you how to do a 10th and 11th step. I'm more than happy to show you how to do inventory, and I refuse to do it on my own. I'm living another life of duality. I hide behind the curtain that I'm in recovery, and I'm not. Now, I still pick up my chips in that other fellowship because I didn't consume beverage alcohol. I stayed sober, but I was not in recovery. Because I know what recovery is now because I've lived authentically. And recovery is kind of raw. It's kind of messy. It's kind of beautiful. It's kind of wonderful. It kind of sucks some days. It's kind of this. It's kind of that. It's wide and beautiful and difficult. And that's why I need all of you. It's wonderful and hard as hell. Welcome. If you're looking for comfort, it's your enemy, not your friend. If you're looking for serenity, peace, understanding, compassion, and the ability to live well, we are here for you. But comfort is not available in this. The process of working this step is disturbing, right? It somewhere in how it works, it talks about perhaps we have disturbed him on the subject of alcoholism, all to the better. The more hopeless he feels, the better. If listening to me is getting you to think inwardly that you might be in more trouble than you think you are, I have done my job today. If you're new here and you're feeling that hopelessness that all of us felt the day we came into this fellowship, welcome. It's the beginning. It's always darkest before the dawn. But the quality of life I have today, and the way that I frame this when I talk is, I'm not a perfect human being, but I can report to you that on most days, mind, body, and spirit are all connected and traveling in the same general direction. And the evidence of that is in how many people I can be of service to. Not just in sponsoring in my fellowships, which is a big deal, but in all areas of my life, in my homes, my occupations, and my personal affairs. And it doesn't mean that I'm perfect. I'm confronting probably one of the maybe the last bridge in my life of recovery, which is my financial situation. There's some stuff there that I got to take a hard look at, and I'm doing it. But the point here is if you are suffering, you can find peace. You can find some serenity. You can find the capacity to look in the mirror and like what you see, because that's my experience. Let's fast forward to 2000. I have that triple bypass. I start putting on weight. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do. You know, I have this appearance of being a person in recovery. I'm getting to podiums and talking about things that I'm not doing. And fast forward, I'm waddling around the International AA convention in Atlanta in 2015. And at this point, I'm suffering from type 2 diabetes. My blood sugars are running in the 400s. I have chronic neuropathy in both my legs. The nerve damage is already done, which later cost me my four toes and nearly cost me my leg. And I'll get to a little bit of that story in a minute. And I'm sitting on a bench sweating profusely because I can only walk about 1,000 feet at a time without wheezing and sweating. And you know, it's not good. I'm suffering. I've got braces on both knees. The people that invited me to come down to the convention, I'm staying at their house in Marietta, Georgia, outside of, and they're having to run to the Rite Aid to get me, you know, ACE knee brace. It's not good. I've got the heaviest compression socks you can have on your legs, so I don't throw clots, right? But if you ask me how I'm doing, oh, I'm fine. Isn't this great? Isn't this convention great? Is it ba 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 boop ba? Because you're not going to get next to it. You're not going to take it away from me. The first thing that gave me comfort in my life, when I was a little kid and I was living in that house and I was afraid, you're not going to take it away from me. I'm sitting on this bench and I had just binged on, I think I bought a pizza or something. I don't know. I can't remember. But I'm sitting on this bench feeling pretty self-satisfied about myself that, you know, I've got them all fooled. And I see this couple that I'd seen at a couple of retreats that I'd led in AA, and I always assumed they were both members of the other fellowship. As it turns out, I was wrong. So they come over and hey, how you doing? And I said, Paulie, Jackie, how you doing? All's well. How you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I'm great. Isn't this wonderful? And she took one look at me and looked at her husband and said, Paulie, go get us some coffee. And now they're both from the Bronx, right? So it was, Paulie, go get me some coffee. And he says to her, are you crazy? The lines at the concession stands are 40 minutes long. I'm not waiting in line to get coffee. And she looked at him and said, in the wife voice, which there might be some men on this meeting who understand what this is, she said very slowly, Paulie, go get us some coffee. And Paulie, oh, okay. And off he went. And she sat down. She sat down next to me. And she looked me in the eye and she said, Patrick, how you doing? And I said, I'm fine. Isn't this great? And I tried to deflect. And she grabbed me by the hand and looked me in the eye one more time and said, Patrick, how you doing? And I said in a little lower tone and in a softer voice, because I had some sense, oh shit. And I said, I'm fine. And she squeezed my hand and said, Patrick, you're full of shit. You're dying and you don't know why. And as a responsible recovered member of Overeaters Anonymous, I can't walk by this with telling you that without telling you that you don't have to live like that anymore. And she proceeded to 12-step me. So if you think you're a little whack because you're on this meeting, your keynote speaker in the morning is a guy that got 12-stepped into this fellowship at the International AA Convention. Beep, 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 beep. I took so well to her 12-stepping that when I got home, I ate like a madman for a month because I have one speed. I'm offended, right? My baseline resentment is that I'm alive, right? That I have these things, and you're not going to take it away from me. I'm male, Lois. Somebody's looking. I got to quit looking at the chat. So I eat like a madman for a month. And then one Sunday, I woke up with a mustard seed of willingness and I went on the OA website. And it turns out that what became my home group at the time was about a mile and a half from my house. So I had to travel, 4,000 miles to Atlanta and back to get 12-stepped into a fellowship that had a meeting a mile away from my house. That's how I roll. So, on August 23rd of 2015, I walked into my first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. It wasn't my first meeting. I'd done some drive-bys in the years previous, but it was the first time I went to a meeting with an intention to do what I was asked to do. Right? It wasn't an investigation. It wasn't a drive-by. And I know that there's probably somebody on this meeting today who's doing a drive-by, and welcome. That's how I got introduced to the possibility of quality recovery and abstinence in Overeaters Anonymous. And I went to that meeting and I sat there and I listened and I thought, this is great for them. This is wonderful. I heard the tools of Overeaters Anonymous that are published in our brown book or in our in our 12 and 12 in our Overeaters Anonymous 12 and 12. And for me, the Overeaters Anonymous literature was critical because I came into this fellowship with the front end of the big book memorized, right? I came in with a fully developed recovery ego representing a program that did not exist in my life. Living in complete duality. So At the end of that meeting, a gentleman approached me and asked me a very intrusive, annoying, and rude question at the time. And that question was, "Hey, what are you going to eat for breakfast?" A funny thing fell out of my mouth. I said, "You know, I don't know, because I don't know how to do this without compulsively overeating." And he gave me a suggestion. He said, "You know, I have a food plan that I follow. I weigh and measure, and I call my stuff into my sponsor. And I'm not saying anybody else on this call's got to do that. I'm not recommending it. It's what I do. The results speak for themselves. What I do for my abstinence speaks for itself. The evidence is in my redemptive healing and in the way in what's happened in my life as a result. I went from an isolated, quote unquote, sober person in recovery, isolated and unable to participate in so many areas of my life, to having a full, rich existence." He said, "I weigh and measure. I call my food in each day. I do a 10th and 11th step." He said, "Are you willing to try that tomorrow morning?" And for 365 days a year for the last 10 years, I've been on the phone every morning calling in what I eat, the amounts that I'm going to eat, right? I was at a restaurant last night. I weighed and measured in the restaurant. I could care less who sees me. I've only been questioned about that once. And it was a guy that had a couple of drinks under his belt. I was at a business dinner. He said, you know, he asked me, "What are you doing over there?" And I said, "I weigh and measure all my food." He said, "Well, that's kind of nuts." And I looked at him and I said, well, it won't kill you. It will kill me. One of the things I hear in this fellowship is we toss this word recovered around a lot. And I am recovered. I'm recovered from what? A hopeless condition of mind and body. That's what I'm recovered from. I'm not cured. That means I have to have a vital spiritual experience each day in order to maintain my fit spiritual condition to live well. Because I cannot compulsively overeat and not live in the world well. I've had struggles in my abstinence. One of the things that happened when I began losing weight in Overeaters Anonymous, I started in 2015. 2016, I started to develop sores on my feet because I'm chronically neuropathic.
Oh, Patrick, that was 35. I'll give you a 3-minute warning.
Thank you, Gail.
You got about 7 left.
Yep, awesome. So in 2018, I'm in the hospital because I've gotten infections in these abscesses I have on my feet. They can't determine what the infection is. They've given me every antibiotic in the book, and it doesn't go. And so an infectious disease doctor shows up in my room. And let me just report to you that if an infectious disease doctor shows up in your hospital room, things ain't going well. Okay, just know that. And she looks at me and she says, "Patrick, we have to give you vancomycin. It's the last gasp of antibiotic. We can only give you 2 doses because it's so strong, it'll shut your kidneys down if we don't, if we give you any more. If by the end of the second dose, the numbers on the infection haven't moved, the bug numbers, as she put it, we have to take your leg from above the knee." And my response to that was to crawl back into the bed and start to cry, right? And about an hour later, my metabolic snack was supposed to come up from the kitchen, and they didn't bring it up. And I had some food with me because I pack my food when I go places, and I had a can of cashews. But I discovered that when I packed my stuff, I forgot my scale. And so what I did was, as I estimated, in my life, I don't have the capacity to estimate. I don't have the ability to measure what I eat with my eyes. I can't do it. Just, for me, an ounce of whiskey is this, right? 1 ounce of 1 ounce of half and half is this, right? If I measure, if I don't use a tool to measure it, that's what it looks like, right? I don't have that capacity, and it's my unwillingness to admit that to myself that will kill me. I'm simply resistant to the idea that I have lost the capacity to understand how or what to eat. I'm utterly helpless in the face of food. And I consume that estimated handful of cashews, and I consume the whole pound. In a hospital, facing possible amputation, severe consequences of my disease, and I relapse in a hospital. Abstinent for 3 years. And I give it up in a hospital because I'm not willing to make a phone call and ask, hey, what should I do? They forgot my snack. And I have a network of people that would have answered that call and said, just let it go. You'll be good. But I made a decision. My book tells me that I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. And those are the words that everybody doesn't. You know, everybody giggles at, oh, I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot. Hee. And the most pernicious words in the book are, though he usually doesn't think so, is it possible you're in more trouble than you think you are? And is it possible that you lack the capacity to assess your own condition? Because I'm not a dumb man, and I don't want to die, and I didn't want to lose my leg, and I haven't. By the way, thankfully. But I had to start my abstinence state over again in 2018. And I had another slip in 2020 because, you know, it was 2020. It got a little weird there for everybody. But I've had black and white back-to-back abstinence since August 26th of 2020. And I have weight, you know, I got right back on the horse. I made a call after consuming that can. It scared the pants off me. They came in the next morning. They said, the numbers have moved. We're going to amputate the first two toes on your right foot. And then a year later, the same thing happened on my left foot. So I have, what God has gifted me with in my life is that every time I pull on my socks in the morning, I am reminded of who I am. And I am profoundly grateful for that mangling. Because then I get up and I go into my kitchen and I turn my scale on and I weigh and measure my food and I eat. And then I go call my sponsor and I tell him what I'm going to have for the day and what I'm going to pack and take with me or what restaurant I'm going to eat at and what I'm going to order and how I'm going to do it. And I have a life of complete internal freedom.
Three more minutes, Patrick.
Thank you. Freedom from the bondage of self that allows me to participate in my family's life. I am present to my sister who had to nearly watch me kill myself with a bottle and then nearly had to watch me kill myself with donuts. I am fully present to them in her time of need. I will be sleeping at her house for the next week to help her. You can be offended by the seriousness of my approach. Good luck with that. The evidence of my recovery speaks for itself. And that's not to put myself different or separate. What I'm trying to communicate to you is the possibility of living a dignified, compassionate, loving, kind life. That was something I couldn't access before that woman had the courage to look a morbidly obese, egotistical jackass in the eye and say, "You're full of shit." She saved my life by having the courage to confront my dishonesty, to confront my selfishness, and to confront what she knew was my disease and not me. She wasn't coming after me on a personal level. She was coming for my illness because she had a solution. Thank God for her. She's still in my network. We communicate often. Trust me, I didn't talk to her for a couple of months after that little incident in Atlanta, but eventually when I got on the horse, I did. And I just want to say this. I'm grateful to everyone on this meeting. Every one of you has played a presence in my life. For those of you that have your camera off, I encourage you to please turn it on. Please be with us. You know, my thing on this, and I'll say this, and I get in trouble for saying this, but coming to a Zoom meeting with your camera off is like going to a live meeting, standing outside the door and putting your ear up to it. You're not participating. You're listening, you're hearing it, but you're not participating. So thank you for those that have had the cameras on. Thank you for all the organizers of this wonderful event, for all the work and effort that you've put into this thing. I'm just so grateful to be here. And I'm happy to begin to answer any questions that may come my way.
My goodness, Patrick, that was wonderful. All righty. They gave me words to say here. Thank you so much, Patrick, for an absolutely wonderful presentation. It really was. I'm not just saying that because it says to say that here. Okay. I heard a lot of honesty, yet I heard a man with a lot of dignity and gratitude for what God has so graciously given him, and is available for all of us.